Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we are back to preview this weekend's Brazilian Grand Prix. When I say we, I mean it's actually just the two of us tonight. It's Mr. Timo Alves Daly joining me on the other end of the line. How are you?
I'm really rather good. I was having a nice day, and then I just couldn't be bothered to make an extravagant dinner. I thought I'll keep it simple. I just had some pasta, some mayo, a sprinkling of cheese, and it had absolutely no right tasting as good as it did. I had a religious experience, and so I'm golden. How are you?
One more time, run those three ingredients past me one more time.
Simply pasta, simply mayonnaise, simply a sprinkling of grated cheese over the top. I grated the cheese myself, mind you. I'm not, I'll do my own graft, but for some reason. I made that taste the best it could possibly taste, and oh, I should go on MasterChef with that for every single round.
Listener, if you turn the audio down just a little bit, what you'll hear is the nation of Italy weeping inconsolably at this moment in time. When you first said
they
that,
weep at everything.
When you first said that, I thought I was genuinely starting to have a funny turn after my flu jab. I had it earlier this evening before getting home. And so if I start making less sense than usual, there's your reason why. But that's completely thrown me for a loop. You just had...
That's not really that eccentric, especially with me with food. That's really rather just basic group one. That's not unheard of.
You're a picky eater.
No, I just was lazy this evening, and my laziness was rewarded with excellent food in the simplest of ingredients.
There's lazy, then there's having... What shake pasta was it, at least?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
It was pasta.
Was it like the tubes? Was it the little spirally ones? Was it long, thin ones?
No, because that's spaghetti.
Which is a type of
pasta.
I know
what spaghetti is. Yes, but I would then call it spaghetti.
Was it the little tubes? Was it big tubes? Was it like cannelloni? Was it rigatoni? Was it penne?
Does it matter?
I'm just trying to get a better mental image. So all I've got at the moment is like just plain sort of penne pasta that's been boiled till it's slightly soft with a healthy covering of
No. This was
grated cheese.
So very, very, very soft indeed. It was lovely. You're not gonna make me feel bad about any of this. This was excellent. I'm having a nice day and you can't ruin it. You might as well move on.
I don't think we can. I think the podcast is irredeemable from this point onwards. We're going to give it a shot.
I don't think
anyway.
This is the point that makes it irredeemable. I think you probably were responsible for that a long time ago.
Oh, I don't know. We'll wait and find out. I'm not going to entirely shoulder the blame if you come out and say that's your dinner. It's completely thrown me for a loop. Anyway, news. We'll dive into that. And sort of important, sort of actually quite sad news is the Formula E all-female test. Jamie Chadwick and Lilo Wadu will be driving for Jaguar TCS Racing. Simona Del Silvestro will be driving for Kiro Race Co., which is formerly ERT. Lena Bula will be driving for Mahindra. And it's just nice to see Mahindra actually hiring a woman for once, as opposed to just the cumulative sort of blend of AI that it previously tried to do. Interestingly, Lola, Mahindra and Kiro only appear to be submitting one driver for this test, therefore leaving three spots out in the ether for no apparent reason, though they could also be simply signed on later. We'll wait and see. However, the overarching concern over this now is that testing itself may not happen due to the severe flooding in Valencia, which has already claimed the lives of several and severely damaged a variety of the sort of local infrastructure. So we obviously send our well wishes to people in the areas of Spain impacted by these flash flooding, and hopefully things are able to get back on track and back to some semblance of normality sometime soon. And obviously our deepest condolences to those who've lost friends, family and loved ones in the actual natural disaster as well. Not really what we want to be covering at the start of the show. Moving on.
Do get them back into the racing, though. They do get to go ahead with the tests in terms of the driver choices. Some solid choices there. It's worth just putting out a bit of a positive note on that side of things, at least, even if there isn't anything on the rest of it.
Yeah, wrapping
Jamie
Chadwick that piece, yeah.
Getting like another bit of a racing series to her list. She's just collecting everything at this point, so it's nice to see that. Bit of a do, an endurance driver, a lot of GT racing and IMSA under her belt, so another bit of crossover there, which we like to see at the moment with female races that we've seen in F1 Academy in particular. And also, if you've seen the racing suits for Jaguar, they look pretty nifty. I do like those. And obviously, we know Lena Bula from Freca from this year with ART after finishing in F1 Academy in P2 last year. So good to see her getting another opportunity somewhere else because Freca has been a bit of a nice idea in some ways in the sidestepping if you don't get into Formula 3. But then we haven't really heard much from her and Marta this year in terms of how they've been doing and all this sort of thing, which makes you a little dubious about it. And Simona, again, another kind of, for lack of a better word, veteran of motorsport at this point. So it's good to see that, like a few of the other drivers that will hopefully get to take part in this test, that she's not been forgotten about either.
Yeah, it's a good selection and a far more upbeat note to round out that news topic on. Meanwhile, it comes to driver markets and names being pulled out of hats for seats. We've got Raffaella Ferreira, I haven't checked the pronunciation on her name, who will be racing for RB next year in F1 Academy. She's raced in Brazilian Formula 4 last year, getting a podium at Interlagos before returning for a second season this year, where she claimed 7 more podiums, including 2 wins. So pretty nifty when it comes to single-seater racing, and F4 looking pretty handy there, ideally suited to the transition to Formula 1 Academy, which is sort of the ideal sort of transference into that mainstream sort of single-seater racing. So yeah, a good signing there, and with a bit of RB backing, could be quite an exciting choice.
Yeah, we were wondering about what some of the grid would look like next year. As we keep mentioning, most of them can't come back because of the 2-year rule. So we were kind of scratching heads as to who might we see and will we be familiar already with any of these? And I'm relatively familiar in terms of I recognize the name, I recognize the face, I have seen a few action shots here and there, but in terms of everything else, relatively new to me. So it's nice that someone on the periphery of mine at least is coming into the mainstream a bit there and getting that chance, and let's see what happens there. So thumbs up from me at least, because that's obviously what matters to RB and F1 Academy when they're choosing these drivers.
Is whether
They're
our
already
podcast is giving them
PPC
the
above
thumbs up.
Google.
Yeah.
Yes, quite.
Moving on from that to an interesting fact that's now come out of last weekend's race, which is this is the o only the second season in Formula One history that has seen 6 drivers on the grid having won multiple races that year. The first being 1981. Of course, this year we've had Verstappen with 7 wins, Norris with 3, Leclerc with 3, Sainz now with 2, Piastri 2, Hamilton 2. So all on 2 or more wins this year. In 1981, it was Piquet on 3, Prost on 3, Jones on 2, Lafitte on 2, Villeneuve on 2, and Reutemann on 2. Interestingly, a successful Argentinian on the grid. Note and take hint to obviously Franco Colapinto. We'll wait and see what he does. He's still got a chance. But
I think you're putting a bit too much pressure on him there for the rest of the season.
The guy can handle it. I have faith in Franco. It's just mad that actually had quite an interesting season when you look at it in that sort of way, ignoring the fact that Verstappen has 7 wins. But we've got sort of these interesting sort of statistics coming up that we haven't seen for ages in Formula One, and sort of multiple race winners and all this sort of thing. With on reflection, it's been a year that has actually panned out a lot more exciting than we would have otherwise given it kudos for, perhaps earlier on.
It definitely exceeded our incredibly low expectations that we had for the year coming in, despite what we thought we were going to get when we got to Bahrain. But it's this weird concoction of we've got these kind of interesting facts, and you think back to some of the race wins we've had. I mean, hell, go back just to the last weekend. Mexico was a good Grand Prix. You had Hamilton winning in Silverstone. That's where he broke the duck's back after such a long winless streak. We've got a championship fight where three drivers realistically up for it, and with constructors' battle is wide open with three teams, and yet somehow we're also, I don't know, underwhelmed weirdly. I don't know. I feel like a lot of it is down to the unnecessary large gaps we've had in places, combined with the fact that when we do get going, we fit a lot into a short space. I mean, we've got two triple headers essentially to finish off a season with a bit of a break in between, but we had about a month break before then. A flurry of races, another month break because of the actual summer break. So it's been this weird concoction of A, being a lot better than we thought, B, the bar being very low to be there in the first place, C, then down again because we've got these big gaps, but then we've got 6 multiple race winners and that could increase. There's enough time for it to still happen, especially Brazil this weekend if Mercedes are stronger like they have been in the past. George Russell wouldn't mind being added to that list and then potentially setting a new record there. I'd have to check the record books on that one. But it's a very odd season in terms of we're both incredibly happy with it and also incredibly confused and not bored, but unsure what to do with it in some respects.
Yeah, the inconsistency to its spacing across the year has really sort of thrown it for a bit of a loop. You go through these sort of fantastic sort of bursts of 3 or 4 weeks at a time with incredible amounts of action and then nothing, and then huge amounts of action and nothing. So it's tricky to try and sort of differentiate what's happened from what weekend to think back and try and pick out bits. Like you go back to Spa and it should have been a Russell win, which would have also put him on this list, but also at the same time bumped Hamilton from it. But obviously that was disallowed because of weight. And then you look at things like trying to remember what's happened to some of the races. Like was Spain a Verstappen win out and out? I think it was, wasn't it? It wasn't a
Yeah,
particularly
pretty much.
exciting one. But then you go to Austria, where it was the collision that gave us the Russell win. You said with Silverstone, that was one of the Hamilton wins. There has been so many interesting races, but A, the season is arguably too long with too many races. It's tricky to remember all of them. And B, it's just so inconsistently ordered. But regardless, it's good going at the moment. And it's not the only record that we've seen sort of setting, tumbling, getting close to, touched, and all sorts. Because at the end of this race weekend, Max Verstappen will set a new record of the most consecutive days leading the championship. Monday saw the record reach 890 consecutive days since he took the race or the title lead in the World Drivers' Championship on the 22nd of May, 2022 in Barcelona. Schumacher holds the outright title of 896 days. Sunday we'll see Max tie with that, and given that no one is close with him close enough to catch him in one weekend, he'll carry that title on post Brazil. So we'll see him still hold that title going into Las Vegas as well.
So it is a sprint weekend, I think, isn't it? So even with the added points, it's still not enough. Then it
Yeah,
must be just
Norris is something like
slimly.
47 behind him. So even if Norris won everything possible, he's still going to be left, what, 12 points shy or 11 points shy. So it's not quite this weekend if they were to
So
have the
I
perfect
don't think I've watched
outcomes.
a sprint live in about a year at least. So I always play catch up, so I kind of forget about points that you actually add on for that when you do win, because I just don't care enough, to be honest.
Is it the top 10?
So I was curious. Oh, I know the top 10 get it, but in terms of
Yeah.
how many points are awarded, it's
Oh,
obviously not
10,
a
9,
Grand
8, 7, 6,
Prix
5, 4,
amount
3,
of
2, 1.
points. Oh, it's
Yeah.
just that these days. Okay. Yeah, no, fair enough then.
Yeah, they made at least the point scoring for the sprint relatively logical. But yeah, it's just interesting that sort of Max has had this level of domination and it's still taking all of this season to finally start to overturn it. But again, going
And
into
even then, it
next
might not
year,
happen.
even then, it might not happen. Mathematically, it's still possible from several different approaches, but it might not happen. Moving from one multiple world champion to the story of another, and one that is appropriate as we head towards the Brazilian Grand Prix weekend. I think clearly
It's almost like
Netflix thought
Netflix
this one
planned it.
thought it out. Yeah, I want to give them credit for this one, which is rare for me to say. Out on November 29th on Netflix, the new Senna TV series will be released. And, well, thoughts so far, from my point of view, it looks bloody incredible. Cinematically, it's very exciting. Looks like it's been shot and edited and graphic properly. It's also been color graded properly, which no one does these days. It's bright, it's colorful, it's impactful, it's what you want with a big history piece where you've got these fantastic liveries and the bright colors of 1980s and 90s Formula One. Overall, jolly excited for it. A lot of Brazilian talent attached to it, so it's going to be a genuine from the heart story. It's got support from the Senna family. I don't know how many episodes we're getting through this run, and I'm a little bit curious as to how
Imagine
it's going
six
to
or eight as a one-off sort of
something
thing, these
like
things
that.
usually are.
I'm curious as to how it's going to advance the Senna story, what new angles and aspects it's going to tell. It looks like there's going to be discussions about his rivalry and equally his sort of friendships and the people that he worked with outside of McLaren. Obviously, he was very friendly with who was the doctor for Formula One through that period of time, who
Sid Watkins.
Sid Watkins. Yes, yeah, we see sort of Sid Watkins on screen talking as sort of a actual
Wonderful.
character in it, which is quite nice to see that we're looking at the stories that surround Senna as well. And I like that we've sort of delved into it and fleshed him out as this very interesting character.
You just reminded me of Sid Watkins. That just makes me think of that. Is it Drake? The meme of "Show me the professor," and it's Alan Prottle. No, the other one.
The
Ah,
one.
yes, this is
Ah,
the one.
yes.
Sid Watkins, Professor Sid Watkins.
Yes.
I watched the trailer. I'm perhaps less excited than you are for it, but I'm intrigued still, and I'll still watch it. I think it's always that tricky thing when you have a TV show or a film, which you, I've probably got your gripes that you've got with the F1 film, but for Senna with this, this is my one for that, just because, like you say, it does look very arty and very cinematically and all these sorts of things. And but I feel like when you do that, you can sometimes risk it, look it, that you lose the realism from it in that way, because obviously I know you can't go out and take these cars out properly and race them as you would have done back then and all the rest of it. But I think it's, for me, I've seen so much documentary footage and real race footage from the time where it looked so good that anything where it changes from that kind of authentic feel to it looks a little odd to me. Not necessarily bad, just different, and I'm not used to that. So I think I imagine even if the first episode really does it for me, it'll still take me two or three to get used to that whole visualization of it, and then to get to enjoy it. And it might then take a little bit of a rewatch in places to really appreciate that style. But again, that's just personal taste, probably. But I'm intrigued for it. And like you say, it'll be interesting to see, because at some point, we all obviously know where his story ends, how much afterwards they do from that point, because you can't imagine they're just going to cut straight to blank after that particular moment. So it'd be interesting to see, is that done with half an hour left for the last episode, or is there a whole episode after that? How much of that story afterwards they tell, that sort of thing. So be very intrigued to see. And like you say, it's got the support from the Senna family. So in terms of that ending, I'll be very intrigued on, from that perspective, because then you'll have that in the back of your mind as you're watching it going, okay, they've gone in this direction with it. That's how they prove to handle it. And never mind all the rest of it beforehand, because obviously there'll be some elements where you think of Japan, for example, that are a bit controversial in places in terms of racecraft. How will that be portrayed in terms of that? Will it be as kind of middle of the road, you kind of pardon that pun, as much as you can, or will it be a bit more biased one way or the other, and probably not in Prost's favour, let's face it, if it's going to go in either direction there. But yeah, very intriguing, and not long to wait either. So we'll probably binge that and see if we can do that before the end of the season ourselves, and then we can have a discussion about it then.
Yeah, I say when I say it's cinematically, I mean it in, and I mean this positively in the same way that we sort of had Rush. It was brilliantly put together. It was done with a passion and a care. It's not been done cinematically like a Marvel film where everything was shot on a
No, I
green
know what you mean.
soundstage. It's been done with a genuine sort of passion to try and make the racing look exciting, but equal at the same time, this is going to have to be a
They've
TV
embraced the
series.
green screen element of it, but they've made it in that kind of artsy, big screen kind of way, where it's far-fetched, but believably far-fetched, because you know it's, they've pushed it, but they've not pushed it too much for it to seem ridiculous.
I from what I've seen in the trailer, it looks like they've based a huge amount of it around realism and sort of a dedication to an accurate portrayal of how racing would have been in that period of time, which is to say not without its danger, as we're well aware with the Senna story. But yeah, it's I'm excited for it. I'm eager for it to start so I can start to sort of piece together these ideas from more than just the trailer because it's got its hooks into me more than the F1 film, and I think that's because I've sort of just already grown tired of the F1 film. I hate to say it, like you could probably piece together the plot of the F1 film so it's sort of not
You've
exciting
probably
anymore.
thought about it more than I have. I see the occasional behind the scenes thing. I watch the trailer, and that's about all the thought I've given it.
Yeah, Brad Pitt at this point sort of does live rent-free in my head with his sort of the gaffes and goofs that we've seen so far. And I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to enjoy that film. But for me, the Senna series has captivated me more. I think at the end of the day, that's where I lie. All that aside, well, it's actually quite a good point to start moving towards the action this weekend at Brazil because Hamilton will get to drive one of Senna's McLarens this weekend. Hamilton is an honorary Brazilian citizen. He is honorary Brazilian. He is sort of loved and adored by the fans in Brazil. He's won several titles there, famously, of course, his first title as well. And yeah, he loves racing at the São Paulo. He is a huge fan of Senna, arguably sort of credits him as sort of being his inspiration as he was growing up. So it's nice to see this sort of, I think this is why Brazil always works the Grand Prix weekend, because it's the Grand Prix weekend that genuinely leans into and enjoys its history. It's the same reason why we always like things like the British Grand Prix. We have a bit of a bias, British bias naturally, but it's a Grand Prix that doesn't forego its own history and its own sort of background that
Even
makes it
the
exciting.
weaker Grand Prix races that happen there are still better than good for the others that we get throughout the season usually. I mean, we were treated in 21 and 22, so when we got to 23, we felt like we deserved a bit more, but it was still better than a lot of the races we had last year. So even when it's bad, it's still good.
As a weekend, it
And
feels
I hope that's
special.
not something that I regret saying on Monday when we review the Brazilian Grand Prix. But it just works, and like you say, it leans into the history. It doesn't do too much of it. It's the only venue, in my opinion, so far, that's worked for a sprint and has actually given us something decent to watch on every occasion we've had one there. So yeah, it's one of these legacy tracks that I feel like deserves a permanent status on the F1 calendar.
I think for me, yeah, I think it's the whole package you get with Brazil. Certainly from watching it at home, I haven't yet been fortunate enough to go along and experience it in person. But with there are certain race weekends where everything just feels right, this being an F1 weekend, and Brazil does still feel like that. It's a shame that it's no longer the finale race of the season because it always felt really special for being that. But
Especially if there's a title to be
especially if
decided,
there's a
it just
title to
felt
be
a little bit
decided, yeah.
more climatic than Abu Dhabi does. I mean, Abu Dhabi, I don't mind it. I'm used to it being there now. It kind of feels like, again, because of most of the time we've already had the title decided by the time we get to Abu Dhabi, that it feels a bit like an epilogue. You get a bit of a sun, one last Sunday drive before we go away for Christmas, and not much of anything happens, but we enjoy going through the motions one more time. Whereas Brazil always feels like, ooh, there's something cooking here. Or it feels like there's more potential for it. Even in 21, before we got to the bit in question, it wasn't the most exciting race. It was just Hamilton just drove off into the distance, and that was pretty much it. You had a little bit of argy bargy early doors, but then that was about it. And it settled down, and it looked like everything was sorted and had that finished the way that it perhaps should have. Then we would have gone, oh, that's a shame. I mean, we couldn't have finished in Saudi Arabia because that would have been a bit too much on the nose in the other direction on equal points and everything else. And we never like to sort a championship on count back. But it feels like Brazil, especially the Brazilian Grand Prix we got that year, that if that had been a finale race deciding, that's not a bad way to go about it.
It's just one of those weekends that just feels special. I think it certainly deserves to be a
It is.
legacy track, and I'd argue the same for Spa, but it doesn't sem to get that treatment. Spa is a circuit steeped in
Yeah,
history.
Spa is another one. I mean, it's a very quick list we could run through, but I feel like we could have potential off-season topic of
Yes,
conversation there.
yeah, we shan't spoil things that will fill us up from December through till February or whatever the season starts on next year. Regardless, we might as well start looking forward to the Brazilian Grand Prix. There are reports that Max Verstappen will be taking a new engine this weekend, so we're expecting
I have factored that in.
at least a five place grid drop. Which all of a sudden, looking at my pole position, might change that. Do I change that? If we say pole
No.
position, do we mean he's the fastest in Q3, or do we mean he's the
Well,
most?
this is the thing,
Because
because
previously, I've always
as
run it as.
part of my pole position prediction, I've gone for Charles Leclerc, but I'm saying he inherits it as Verstappen gets pole but gets a grid penalty for the engine change. And my basis for that is that Verstappen got pole in 21 and 23, so it's likely he gets pole, but he doesn't actually get pole. So there's a potential here that you get a point if Verstappen gets pole, but I also get a point if Leclerc gets pole.
Okay, what I've just changed will completely sort of piss your theory into the wind.
Well, that's just not going to happen, so you're not going to get a point, so it's fine. There we go. So
So
then
obviously,
it's up to
Verstappen, yeah.
you, which is never a good thing to have to say. Charles Leclerc getting pole, does that mean he has to be the fastest in Q3? Because
No,
I've always had this thing of it being frustrating that you didn't actually get pole because you aren't starting on pole position on Sunday's race because you have a penalty.
Yeah,
It's
is it
the
the
person
person
who's
who gets
starting.
awarded the pole award trophy Pirelli little tire thing, or is it the person who actually starts the front of the Grand Prix on the Sunday? I'm going to do this by Formula 2 rules, which is if you take grid box number one on the Sunday, you are awarded pole. That counts as pole. In Formula 2, if you take grid box number
That
one,
works for me because that's going to be Charles Leclerc.
yeah, if we can agree on that being fair, then I'm happy with that.
We'll go with that. Yeah, this will be
Yeah.
where it doesn't bloody happen anyway, so it doesn't matter. But.
Yeah, this is where I get the point for Yuki Tsunoda. But yeah, in Formula 2, if you line up in grid box number one on the Sunday, you are given the bonus 2 points, isn't it, for pole position in Formula 2. So that's the rule we're going to use for this one, just in case Max Verstappen does something interesting, does get an engine penalty, does somehow make it through to Q3 and sets a pole lap. Other things, there's been a bit of reprofiling, resurfacing, and sort of runoff area work around the circuit. It's relatively minor changes, but yeah, it's just sort of changing to catch fencing, guard railing, realignment of things here and there. Nothing that's going to hugely impact the racing unless they suddenly decide to completely dig up the runoff area at, what is it, turn four and turn three, the bits where you can really easily shovel a driver wide and sort of do.
Say 2021 flashbacks.
Yeah, that sort of thing. For more on that, go back and listen to our review of the Mexican Grand Prix, where we spoke about sort of essentially the idea of just dive bombing it down the inside, picking an imaginary apex, and calling it a defensive move. Martin had some interesting and very valid points on that one too. With that out of the way, actually, no, there is one thing we really ought
No
to
dear.
check. What?
No, it's just you've thought of something on the fly. It's like, oh, what
It's
is it?
nothing
What's it got on its
particularly.
mind?
It's nothing particularly bad. It's the weather, because Brazil is famous for having this changeable weather conditions. Might as well have a quick check and see what it's predicted to be across the weekend. Friday,
Snow.
no snow actually. Friday pleasant with times of cloud and sun. Saturday clouds followed by a brightening sky, and Sunday humid with low clouds. So, chance of rain. It looks like rain is being blown away into the early stage of next week, unfortunately. Monday, Tuesday, and even Wednesday, humid with showers in the afternoons and then thunderstorms. So unless that weather system picks up the pace and moves in early, we could be on for a dry but sizzling Grand Prix weekend. There is a bit of a chance of rain on the Saturday, but wet quali, not the worst thing in the world.
Against it, especially if we can have some more Haas magic.
Exactly. If we get a bit more of that.
And then that ruins our complete pole position theory entirely there, but that's usually how this goes anyway.
Haas magic applied to the RB. We might as well get into this now. Our predictions.
Liam Lawson.
Yeah. Oh, it's probably going to go that way.
Knowing your
It's
luck.
no, my luck entirely. Yes, our predictions. We always start with making our pole position predictions. As you've already heard us mention, Timo, you've gone for Charles Leclerc. I've gone for Yuki Tsunoda. I think we've got a good spread of a grid there.
Yeah, that's a diplomatic way of putting that. We move swiftly on, I think, before I'm gonna say let's move swiftly on.
Yeah, podium. We've both gone for Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton somewhere on ours. Timo, let's start with yours.
I've gone with Hamilton P1, Leclerc P2, Piastri P3. With the exception of 2022, Hamilton and Verstappen have won every Grand Prix here since 2018, and it would be a good final win for him at Mercedes. Leclerc solid P2 helps with the championship, and Piastri just Piastri, so makes sense for P3.
Who won in 2018? 2018 was Hamilton as
Vettel.
well.
Oh yeah, since 2018,
Oh, since
that's inclusive
2018.
of that.
So who won
Vettel
2017
was
then?
before
Yeah,
that.
Vettel.
Vettel, I
Vettel,
believe.
Ferrari. Nice. I've gone for my podium of Charles Leclerc, Carlos Sainz, and Lewis Hamilton. I reckon Lewis is going to be up there. I reckon the Mercedes is going to have the form, but I think the Ferrari is just going to have the edge on it this weekend. And again, I think the form we've seen over the first two rounds of this triple header, the Ferraris, I'm not going to say they look untouchable, but they've certainly had a level of competence that other teams have
They are the team to beat, yeah.
struggled to meet. Yeah. And Charles Leclerc didn't have a great time out in São Paulo last year, so I think he's got a lot to make up for.
Oh,
And
stop
Carlos
pushing it
Sainz,
too. It's quite
again,
difficult to do one better. You've just got to make it to the grid, no?
Carlos Sainz, meanwhile,
Hey, is that my podium as well? No, I'm buggering myself here.
Carlos Sainz, meanwhile, on a high from his win in Mexico, looking to probably just sort of carry that on. I think we can see him back on the podium again for Brazil. It's not going to put him into title contention, but it's just going to sort of shore up his position as having had a really
That
good
was
season.
such an
Yeah.
awkward thing of him winning last weekend. He then immediately got eliminated
Yes,
from, like,
despite
you couldn't have
winning.
done anything better, but also you're out. But,
Yeah,
oh,
even if
that's
he had
tough.
fastest lap, it wouldn't have been enough to keep him in the title fight, which is kind of
Kind
disappointing,
of
really.
amusing.
But yeah, it's one of those Carlos Sainz things. Meanwhile, fastest lap. Timo, you've gone for Lando Norris. Why?
Yes, he got it last year, and Bottas did repeat fastest laps before in Brazil, so that's a good enough logic for me.
It's pretty sound logic. I've gone for Nico Hülkenberg. He set pole position around Brazil before. This is the first time that Haas have ever had both their drivers with pole positions in Brazil previously, which is an interesting statistic. So I reckon Nico's going to go well here. He's gone well here before. I think he's finished a high of P4 once. So
Wouldn't
yeah,
be
he's
against it.
yeah. Haas are doing all right at the moment. I don't want to jinx it. Don't want to say too much, but they have.
He says jinxing it.
Yeah. They have every possibility of doing something interesting here.
There's a 1 in 20 chance.
Yeah. Less 1 in 18. I don't think we ought to keep the stakes in that statistic.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So it improves it for Nico, if anything. When it comes to wild predictions, yeah, Timo, I think that's a
This
wild one.
no, it does, it does count as well, because I
Yeah.
double checked this, because I thought, dear Lord, this is actually this qualifies. I've gone for Perez finishes in the top five. It's less wild than Ellie May's Perez Mexico podium prediction, but it is still wild. Context: last time Perez was in the top five was in Miami, and at that point, Biden was still the Democratic nominee for president. So that kind of tells you all you need to know there. Admittedly, Biden was also still the Democratic nominee for president when Verstappen last won a race, but still, you see how dire the Perez situation is there if you measure it politically, which we try not to do, but I just thought that was funny.
I mean, as we run up to the US general election, it's a fun sort of measuring point. Yeah, Perez finishing in the top five, because of course there was the interesting Instagram post from his dad over the weekend, which almost seemed to hint that maybe Mexico had been Checo's last race, but it seemed a bit harsh to swap him out
It seemed
immediately
quite
after
amusing,
that.
the contrasts from he's got to win the world championship to he's done.
Both posted by his dad within
I
the
know,
space of
that's the
like
amusing thing. It's just the swinging of
72
him in like
hours.
less than a week.
He did
It's
then,
just ridiculous.
he did earlier today post something saying, sorry if that got misconstrued. I don't mean that he's leaving Formula One. He's still going to be around for championships to come. I'm like, my God, make up your mind, Mr. Perez. This is ridiculous.
Oh.
But yeah, Helmut Marko has been making some tasty noises about Liam Lawson
Please never
saying,
say that sentence again.
I'm going to repeat that sentence to you in your dreams.
No, you're not.
But he said that he was impressed with how Liam raced in Mexico, which is probably kind of annoying
Amusing.
if you're Sergio Perez. And also, Christian Horner said that it wouldn't have been great for him as a team principal if he didn't check if Franco Colapinto had any contracts for
Yes,
next year.
I saw
So
that.
the ongoing theory of Yuki Tsunoda yet again getting shafted by Liam Lawson moving up to replace Sergio Perez and Franco Colapinto moving into the RB rolls on. But
Or the even more amusing thing being so gets the Red Bull suit next to Max Verstappen.
hell, I would love to see Colapinto being set loose in the Red Bull.
You've got one season, all right. I've
All
got
right.
nothing to lose. I wasn't expecting to be here anyway. Fuck it, let's go.
Remember what he did with one race? Come on. What?
Exactly.
I mean, equally, this sort of goes back to the sort of promising driver appears in a Williams, promising driver moves to RB. We've seen this before. Didn't end well for Nick De Vries. At least Colapinto's had more than
This is
one
why we
race to
skip
sort of
that
prove
step and we just
himself.
stick him straight in the Red Bull. Just
Yeah.
see, nah, bugger
Off
it.
you
Why
go.
not?
Yeah. I don't. Franco Colapinto doesn't strike me as the kind of guy to crack under the pressure of being Verstappen's teammate either. He just has this sort
Not as
of.
quickly as others might have done, no.
No. He just sort of has this nonchalant attitude of, I don't care. I'm in Formula One.
Again, I think a lot of the yeah, a lot of he wasn't expecting to be there this year. No one expected him to be this there this year. And all the other drivers that have been Verstappen's teammate have either been established for a while or have been looking to get after that seat, and then when they've got it, have gone, oh.
Yeah.
And whereas he's kind of thinking, well, he's already on borrowed time in some ways anyway, because he wasn't expecting to be here this year. He's definitely not expected to be there next year. So any time he gets, he's just going to go, yeah. It's kind of as close to Perez in 2021 as you can get in terms of I wasn't expecting to be on the grid this year, so I'll do what you need me to do, but also I'm gonna do whatever the heck I want, because even if you fire me, cool. If I can do half as good as I've been doing in the Williams in the Red Bull and translate that accordingly, Other teams will want me. They'll make space. I'll figure it out. And then who cares?
Yeah, it's truly wild and crazy times if you're Franco Colapinto, or if you're just anyone connected to that Red Bull seat at the moment. It's up in the air would be the best way of describing it. But yeah, that draws to an end our predictions.
Well,
Unless
did you
you,
actually see your world prediction?
I didn't. No, I got so excited thinking about Franco Colapinto.
Can we clip that for the
We've said a lot of clippable things, and I don't have the time and energy to go back through the nearly, what, 300 episodes we've ever done of this bastard thing to go back and clip all of them.
No,
So,
just that one. Don't worry, I'm not gonna make you do all of them today.
I'm just glad we're not sort of famous enough to have someone else making like clip shows of us either, because that is also thankfully.
That'll come. We'll pay some poor bastard to go back through everything.
That would be a dangerous day for me when that happens. My wild prediction: neither Norris nor Verstappen in the points.
Would be amusing, especially if Leclerc wins.
Exactly. It's really going to put Leclerc back into the title height, title height, title fight. I tried got fight and hunt the wrong way around there. Clearly,
It
the
could have gone
flu.
in a different direction, so bad. That
It,
didn't
I
go too
also
badly
had
for
a
you.
brief panic across my mind there when I nearly put the wrong consonant at the start of the word hunt.
No.
It took all of my effort to get it correct that time as well. Jeez, this flu jab is really messing with me. We ought to hurry up and finish up this podcast before I do say something completely diabolical. That is all we've got time for on this week's episode. In the meantime, if you want any more from any of us, Timo, where can you be found?
This week you could find me over on Is It Fast, where I've got a brand new article out detailing the story so far of Miss Rebecca Busi, Italian Stallion, Dakar driver.
I did see that come out earlier today. I'm looking forward to reading that later this evening. Should be a fantastic little tome to browse through. In the meantime, if you want any more from me, you can find me, of course, on social media as at Jesse on Cars, or you can find me writing for Classic Car Weekly. Our latest issue dropped today, and it's got all sorts of very interesting bits and pieces in it, including our ex-Stirling Moss E-Type has now gone to America. And we've got a buying guide for the 997 Porsche 911. They're the two things that I can remember off the top of my head. So plenty of exciting
Pretty good
stuff there.
considering flu jab.
Yeah, I'm impressed to remember that. And if you want to actually meet me in person, I'll be down in London and Brighton across the weekend. You don't wince at that. People might want to do that. I'll be down at the St. James's Motoring Spectacle on Pall Mall this weekend on Saturday, and in various places covering the Veteran Car Run on Sunday, setting off from Hyde Park at 7 a.m. and hopefully making their way down to Brighton. It's all pre-1905 cars celebrating the Emancipation Run from 1905, I think it is.
Blue bit is definitely, hopefully.
A number of cars will set out from
As
Hyde
sure as I'm
Park.
sure that they are looked after very well, they're still quite old.
All of them are over 100 years old. So yeah, usually there's a fair percentage of them are successful at covering the distance. Speaking of covering the distance, our podcast does as well. Of course, we have listeners all around the world, and we are very thankful to the great many of them. But our thanks, of course, this weekend goes to our listeners in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I did have a check. We don't have any Brazilian listeners, as far as I'm aware, but we do have some Argentines
Shame.
enjoying the show. So thank you to you all. And a case or two of Quilmes beer would go down a treat. I think I've said that right. Quilmes. The really nice local beer you guys have would go down a treat, or a bottle of cerveza or Crioa Grande. Is I had to check the pronunciation on that one though.
Can
Crioa.
you be more of an Englishman trying to do a foreign language?
I'm trying to make an effort. I feel that's the best I can do for our listeners. They appreciate it when we at least try. I think it's better than simply going, "I'd like a bottle of Creusa and a bottle of your Crioa Grande, merci beaucoup." I'm trying. Anyway, regardless, you guys have some fantastic
I'll
wine,
wait for
some
someone
nice
to clip
beers.
all of this in the future.
On it, look, the Argentines seem to be really
There's going to be
supportive
an
of
hour and a
Formula
half
One
of
at the
just
moment.
you.
I'm never going to be able to travel abroad again if someone does that. Anyway, regardless, thinking of beautiful Argentinian beers and wines, I could really go for asado right now. So, thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again soon with a review of all the action and sprint action from the Brazilian Grand Prix weekend.